It's nice to see you. Come on in, take a seat. My name is Cass.
My name is Tease.
And welcome to Author's Note.
Don't like, don't listen.
Tease, have you watched or read or partaken in anything fun this week?
So, I started a new Fire Emblem Three Houses file, but...
Yeah, tell me about it.
I don't refer to it as Fire Emblem Three Houses file. I just go, I'm gonna go hang out with Claude. And it's been driving everybody crazy, but I'm having a fun time. I also told Cass that Sylvain wasn't real, and he got mad at me.
He's real, and he can hurt you.
But I meant it as, like, he's not real in the game. Like, you know how the janitor in Scrubs wasn't supposed to be real, was supposed to be, like, imaginary? That's what I meant. Mm-hmm.
But then Cass got, but like, I got very defensive got and really said, Dorothy isn't real either.
It was really funny. I'm so sorry about that. But that's about it. What have you been... Oh, actually, I made my mom watch 8th grade. With me on my birthday, which was a really fun time to watch together.
Yes, happy birthday.
Thank you.
Happy birthday, a moment in teastery.
It's 26, babes. I am losing my health insurance.
I was gonna say. Rest in peace.
It's okay. It's okay. She'll come back to me somehow. What about you, Cass? Have you been partaking in any media lately?
Well, so this is actually going to be a very fun segue into our topic for this week. But... before I do that, I did watch the third season of Agretzko, which was so good and so wonderful.
I watched it too.
Yeah, I watched it while I had the flu last weekend. So I just kind of laid in bed in a total daze and watched Haida fuck up his life further, which is always really fun.
I watched it at work. It was really slow at work, so I just watched all of it at work.
Well, I mean, it's short, too. It's like 15-minute episodes.
Yeah, and if I had to do something, like, I could easily pause in between episodes and stuff like that. So it wasn't that big of a deal. The workday was really slow, so nobody judged me. But that was a wild ride of a season. I mean, I don't want to give spoilers since it is still a new thing, but boy howdy, that sure was a season. Yeah.
My two, like, go-to Netflix recommendations for people when they want some slice of life stuff is Agretzko and Relakuma and Kaoru. So go watch both of those. They're really good, especially Relakuma and Kaoru. Second season win. But aside from that, I took an interesting trip over the past 2 weeks into two very different properties, which are both they're two different properties. So I watched The Old Guard with my best friend, and that was really fantastic. It's a movie on Netflix with Charlize Theron, and there is a implied lesbian couple and a direct on-screen visible gay couple, which was fantastic. It's a really fun popcorn movie. Definitely recommend. It's a little campy, but it also does, like, a great job of subverting some more, like, harmful tropes and kicking the white saviorness kind of in the ass. And then the other one is I watched the Game Grumps play through all the runs of Undertale.
Oh.
Because I knew nothing. Well, I knew some things about Undertale. I knew sans Undertale. That was all I knew.
That's all you really need to know, Mr. Undertale.
That's not true at all. That's not true at all. It's a phenomenal game.
As an Earthbound and Moon RPG remix fan, that's all you need to know. I've never played Undertale
in my life.
We get
it, Tease, your niche. So I didn't directly play it. I did watch people play it. But watching people play it made me want to buy it for myself. I wholeheartedly believe you would love that game, Tease. It is funny and clever and has some really amazing gameplay mechanics. But our topic for this week is what makes a fandom last.
Okay.
Which we're just going to be talking anecdotally and kind of with our own experiences. But I had never gotten into Undertale because it was so overwhelming at the time, which it kind of exploded onto Tumblr.
Okay.
And in contrast, The Old Guard... if Tumblr were still, like, the dominant fandom space, I truly believe that The Old Guard would have had and garnered, like, a massive following. But I only saw The Old Guard on my timeline for maybe a week probably half a week more generously. And it was a few blips of people drawing fan art of Charlize Theron with an axe, because how could you not? And then it just kind of disappeared. And no one talked about it. And no one is talking about it. Which, sometimes that happens, yes. But I found it strange and odd. And it's like, this is the kind of property that would have thrived with a community space, and it just doesn't have one anymore. And I think that kind of gets into the idea of like what Twitter has done for fandom, both good and negative, a lot of negative. And we can talk about that this week. But yeah, I recommend Undertale. Very fun. Also, the Game Grumps do a really fun playthrough of it. Love those boys. Love that whole team.
Undertale has been on my radar for a very long time, obviously. Mm-hmm. We all know who Sans is. But I mean, I was a longtime Homestuck fan, so I appreciate how far Toby has come. And I am, like I was mentioning, I'm a really big Earthbound fan. I really enjoy Moon, and both of those games are heavily a huge influence on Undertale. And then, not to get like deep emotional, but in 2017, my cousin passed, and one of the last conversations the two of us had was him recommending me Undertale, and I recommended him Earthbound. So it's been one of those things that I keep wanting to play, but I don't know if I can play just yet, if you catch my drift. So it's there. It's in the forefront of my mind, but also, like, there's so much I do know about Undertale that I will probably die if I play it. So maybe one day. I also am like only a semi gamer.
pick a side tease.
This whole week has Cass been roasting me about where I land on the gamer scale. And so I don't know. It's just one of those things that I'm not 100% sure if I actually do want to play just yet. But with the old guard, could it be that the Netflix algorithm has to come into play here with this movie?
I don't know. That's also an interesting thing to bring up, because there was a series that was done by the Wachowski sisters called Sense8, which ran on Netflix.
Yes.
Which had a pretty sizable fandom following. It, again, had visible queer relationships. It had Black and other people of color in lead positions. So, like, really, like, fantastic diversity and representation, and, like, a bomb soundtrack, and, like, a really interesting idea, but Netflix didn't promote it and didn't advertise it on the same way that they did. What was the competing show at the time? There was, like, a show that, it wasn't 13 Reasons Why, but there were shows on Netflix that were getting tons and tons of promotion, and, what was the other one?
Was it Orange is the New Black? Because I know a lot of people complained about The Get Down being canceled after two seasons as
that's
well.
That's what I was thinking of.
While Orange is the New Black had like 5 and it just sucked after season 3.
Exactly, yeah. And like was so very apparently like harmful in some of the messages and things like it promoted. Like it made a shit ton of anti-Semitic jokes that people were really uncomfortable with, and it like refused to acknowledge the existence of bisexuality, which people were like, But yeah, I mean, time and time again, shows will get canceled on Netflix after their second season because at that point Netflix has seen how much profit it will garner them and doesn't see a point. It's cheaper for them to do a new production of a totally new series than to continue production, I think somebody said at one point, which is really frustrating and worries me as we get into, like, season 2 of The Witcher, and I'm like, please don't take this from me, please.
Well, with a lot of, I mean, not to sound like a conspiracy theorist, but a lot of times when a Netflix show makes it past the second season, if it even gets a second season, it becomes like oddly anti-socialist, anti-communist propaganda always, and always ends up becoming this weird, like, what's the word I'm looking for? Propaganda, yeah. It becomes this weird propaganda for capitalism. Like, if you look at what's happened to Stranger Things and how Stranger Things has progressed, and how if you can't really find a way to be appealing and useful to some kind of weird propaganda for Netflix, then to continue to consider purchasing Netflix, I've noticed, it kind of gets knocked down a peg and gets canceled. I mean, for instance, Tuca and Birdie had a huge following, and yet it was canceled. And I think that's impartial because Netflix just didn't know how to shoehorn their own opinions and wants into a series. Yeah. And I mean, now Tuca and Birdie's thankfully got picked up for Adult Swim, but like, a lot of times, if Netflix can't shove their agenda into it, like with how, I mean, let's be real, slowly but surely, Orange is the New Black did become like this weird shoving of like, this is what we think about the LGBT community, this is what we feel about people of color, this is how we feel about religion besides Christianity. I'm sorry, my brain's like dead today, and so on and so forth. It's okay. Feel like a lot of times, if Netflix can't promote a certain type of message with their series, then they're not going to continue to pick it up despite how much fans support it and how much fans care about it, which is what essentially happened with Sense8, One Day at a Time and stuff like The Get Down as well. And I guess even in that case, Tuca and Birdie and all of that jazz. So, but
it's very weird because Netflix is essentially, I mean, it's a media conglomerate at this point.
It
and
is.
So it is so much like it has to be everything to everyone and offer all of these options without offending people. And I mean, just recently, kind of in the news, there was this huge backlash because the movie Cuties, which comes out on September 9th on Netflix, it's by a Black Senegalese woman, and the movie is about the over-sexualization of young girls, prepubescent girls, and them imitating sexualized actions without even understanding the context of them. And so I guess the movie is about like a twerking competition, and so for Netflix's promotional art, they picked a scene from the movie where it's like these girls in hypersexualized poses in these like kind of skimpy costumes, as opposed to the actual official movie poster, which is like these girls running down the street, like, laughing, wearing, like, bras and underwear over top of their clothing, and people were furious. And it's just, like, it's so difficult, too, because Netflix is made up of a bunch of subsidiary studios, and while it is a... My cat is making noise. Welcome to the table. It's guest expert Eskel. Yeah, Netflix both can't be too left-leaning and can't be too right-leaning, because then they'll lose like a considerable portion of their market in either direction. And they're also across the globe. They're not just centralized in the United States, you know? So it's a mess. Yeah,
it's a mess. And I mean, people who have talked to me for more than 5 minutes know this. I am extremely anti-Disney for that very reason.
Yeah.
I hate the conglomerate that Disney holds for that very reason. And I really firmly believe that with the centralization of huge conglomerate companies like this, that we are losing independent thought and viewing within media. And there's a reason why independent cinema exists, and there's reasons why there's antitrust laws put in place during the 60s and the 20s and so on and so forth. And it's time that we need to recreate those laws and get rid of those loopholes for this very reason. And but to go, we went
make
on a huge
the mouse common domain.
The mouse should be common domain. And with the so for instance, as we're recording this, Mulan just came out. And to segue back to what makes the fandom last, the fact that Mulan is not only behind the Disney Plus paywall, but then also an additional exclusivity paywall, creates a barrier against viewers, which in turn also affects a creation of a fan space. And I'm kind of piggybacking here off of an idea that a friend mentioned on a podcast. If you guys don't listen to Playing Dress Up, it is a cosplay podcast that my friend Joe hosts. And I was listening to an episode with another mutual friend as a guest. Her name is Chelsea Seashell Cosplay. And Joe was talking about how a fan base lasts definitely if you consider the amount of money you put into it and the amount of time that you put into it. So there's an investment aspect to fandom, if you think about it. And with Mulan, you are forced to pay a certain amount of money. We all know what the original Mulan is like. We all know what that movie is about, you know? And then for you to force yourself to invest in it, you're going to care a little bit more about seeing it if you're going to spend your $30 or whatever to see it. So and that goes the same with time as well. For instance, you really care about the Witcher games, right? How much time have you put into the Witcher games?
I have put, I don't know the number off the top of my head. I don't replay games very frequently, but I have frequently replayed The Witcher. I think I'm on, like, my fourth replay of it.
There we go.
I don't even necessarily go for different routes. But on top of that, I've put hundreds of hours into each of those playthroughs. And then I've also played the DLC multiple times, and I've read the books, and I own the Omnibus Collection. Like,
there we go.
Yeah.
You put your time and money into this. And when a game is 60 hours and you have to buy the $60 game on top of the $400 machine to play the game on, you're going to be a little bit more invested as opposed to spending your $10 a month for your Netflix subscription and you can finish a whole entire anime, a 13 episode anime in a day if you really wanted to.
Well,
you know?
And I mean, there's also on top of like the investment of your money, right? There is also a level of, with exclusivity of the sort of like, how do I want to put this? The appeal of something which is limited in quantity and holding that experience, like with Promare, which I think we're going to end up talking about quite a bit. But because Promare was like a limited release and you had to go out of your way and like a lot of people like, There was a hype because it was limited and because only a certain number of people had seen it. Mm-hmm. And so, like, there was an immediate desire for people to be a part of this thing. I mean, it's the same reason people go to, like, midnight releases and shit like that.
Yeah.
It's because they want that, like, they want in on that premiere experience before anyone else can get in on
it. And as well with Promare, there was this prestige of something that you already trust. People love Trigger. I personally think Trigger is just nice to look at. I don't really think any of their stuff is substantial, but with knowing the studio and trusting the studio, there's already this built-in fan base of people who are going to continue to see it anyway. And then when they actually did get to see Promare and they did get to experience it, then that became...
And when Promare is literally just like, we're Trigger Studio, the movie.
Literally.
With like
if you
all
haven't
of its
seen
self-referential
it,
jokes.
It's really just Gurren Lagann made for 2020, you know? And there's also this appeal with Promare that the characters are still... I always refer to it as Barbie dolling because... A lot of times with characters that aren't super strongly made, there's enough gray area to play pretend with them, which
is
what builds a fandom really well, which builds fan culture, headcanons, fan fiction, so on and so forth. So with Promare only being a 90-minute movie, but there being a base enough personality to each character, it set up the perfect experience to make a fan base and to create a space for both analysis and meta, as well as going one step further with creating headcanons and fan fiction.
Well, and I mean, like, that's the thing, right? Is if your property is offering characters, it seems like more often than not, the two character types that people get very, very invested in are either... Sir, please stop your jingling. Are either background-ish characters slash characters with very little nuance or characters who are so heavily developed that it is very easy for a viewer to pick up on their voice. When you fall into this like sort of middle gray area where a character is neither totally fleshed out but has too many character traits for you to really kind of like play around and make them super mutable and moldable, like people aren't generally as interested in them as characters.
But I also feel like in situations like with, I was talking about this with a friend earlier, with idol anime, it's the perfect space to get attached to because these characters are just one step above, like, the bare minimum a lot of times. It's like...
Well, but, like, that's kind of what idol characters, like, it is essentially like buying a doll.
Yeah.
I mean, you're buying a JPEG, right?
Yeah.
But it's like going to Walmart when it would be like, okay, here's the new Barbie line. It's it's Miss Barbara Millicent Roberts, and she's in these different outfits this time. What kind of story are you going to make up for her?
Exactly, like, exactly. And that's why mm-hmm. people love them, because they can project on them, they can attach to them. And when you can project and attach to them, there's definitely, it's an easier way to relate to the character and get attached to them, and then buy mm-hmm. merchandise for them, which then encourages the producers of those characters, because sometimes it's not even a producer of a show, to build games around them, to build movies, to build shows around them, to build more merchandise. So then you kind of get into the cycle of buying more merchandise and caring more about the character. And mm-hmm. it traps people so well, which is why whaling, so if you don't play gacha games, whaling is people who spend exuberant amounts of money on a mm-hmm. gacha game. And if you care about the girl, you're going to end up whaling for her anyway. You're going to put money into the series, which then you're going to be invested once again, because we talk about time investment and money investment. Yeah. And then if you do play a game for them, you're going to be invested time-wise as well, because you were sitting there and tapping on your phone playing this game. So mm-hmm. truly, if there is going to be a trigger gacha game, it is fucking over for everybody.
I think one of the things, too, that has really sort of changed the atmosphere and environment for fandom as a whole, too, is the migration from Tumblr largely to Twitter. And Twitter has created a very non-hospitable place for lasting power in fandom.
Yeah.
The way Twitter is structured is incredibly rapacious and built upon an algorithm which prizes consistent and frequent posting, which makes it very, very difficult for artists to maintain visibility. And I'm going to speak, like, generally speaking about artists in general, but, like, that includes fan artists as well. And then when we moved to Twitter away from Tumblr as, like, a prime platform for fandom, we lost so much that I miss constantly. Like, I cannot find fan edits on Twitter. There's no appropriate tagging system mm-hmm. where it's like I can go through and look at all the posts related to that. Twitter's search function is defunct. It doesn't work. It's awful. Instagram is also kind of the same. And Instagram being like, oh, everything can only be square. Fuck off, Instagram. I'm tired of the one-to-one, like, ratio on every single one of my pieces of artwork. Mm-hmm. Please mm-hmm. stop.
I miss the tagging system.
I miss tagging so much.
As someone who was not a fan artist and more of just a casual reblogger back in the Tumblr days, I missed being able to consistently find fan art of the things I cared about. And I also miss finding people who talked about the same thing over and over again. Because with Twitter, mm-hmm. it's just, usually it's either the most popular tweet or the most popular the most recent or whatever, but it was easy to see a pattern of who was posting about what via Tumblr mm-hmm. and then also with Tumblr you could see who people reblogged stuff from, and then from there you can make friends and make followers from there. And I feel like
and there's an argument that Twitter has these features, but it's not the same.
It's not. You know,
it is not in any way like the same kind of construction. Twitter's not meant for images. Twitter's not meant for video. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. the nature of Twitter, it was made for, and this infuriates me every single fucking day, it was made for political debate.
Was it
which
really?
Doesn't actually, yeah.
How? I mean,
that's the idea, is that Twitter was made for discussion so that you could frequently discuss things with people. But that doesn't work because you're limited to so many characters. And I mean, we got more characters like a few years ago. It's like, what, 240 now or
it's
something?
It's 280.
280. There was a time when it was 140, right?
Yes.
And it's like, you cannot communicate a clear point in that amount of characters with enough nuance to actually satisfy a conversation. Mm-hmm. So then Twitter has also had the effect on fandom and communication as a whole in social media of being a much more negative, hostile place. Mm-hmm. Like, to degrees which, like, we joke about the call-out culture of Tumblr, but at least on Tumblr, you had the time to, like, curate and write a full-length blog post that wasn't cut off and that you could, like, really neatly format, as opposed to Twitter, where it's like, if I want to read, like, a miniature article, I'm talking, like, 200 words, I have to cycle through a shit ton of tweets. Mm-hmm. And, like, mm-hmm. in a thread which is not optimized for viewership. And now Twitter is making it more easy and more convenient than ever to to silence people who you may disagree with, and like for good and bad, you know, like there's some benefits to that, but there's also some really huge political implications that come with that. And it's just like, I think people talk pretty frequently now about how it's like, why is everyone arguing? Like, the huge boom of anti-culture comes with Twitter because you have blockchains, because people are constantly arguing, because there's not as much nuance. It's not as easy to see who a person is via their presence on Twitter. It is just like a much more hostile landscape, and it's made fandom a lot less fun. Like, mm-hmm. At least to me. And like, yes, I know Tumblr still exists, but we all know it's not the same. It's also overrun by Nazis and porn bots, and like, every day I'm like, kind of want to go back.
Yeah,
I want to go back a little bit.
I miss Tumblr big time. I never was a big Tumblr user. But there was more community involvement in Tumblr. It was easier to make a group of friends. And I mean, by the time Tumblr discovered and rolled out group chats, I was like, I'm 25 years old. I don't want to talk to 15-year-olds. But if Tumblr included group chats like in 2013 or something like that, I would be going off the shit. And people talk about stuff like Pillow Fort and stuff, but I mean, who uses Pillow Fort? I really haven't seen that many people. Like, I know about it, I know it exists, but how active is Pillow Fort?
I've been teasing the idea of slowly migrating over to Pillow Fort for a long time, and it's invitation only right now, or mm-hmm. you can pay for an invite code, which I actually think is kind of clever, mm-hmm. To help them pay for their server costs. At the end of the day, it's I can't even say like we just flock to wherever celebrities go, because like celebrities weren't hyper visible on Tumblr, which mm-hmm, was actually mm-hmm. really nice. But K-pop stans in your Twitter mentions are like the really, really fucking long Tumblr posts that would go by, where people would do like rainbow gifs of that like one post where it's like and reblog if you support gay rights. K-pop stans aren't bad. I don't have a problem with K-pop stans as a whole.
I had stan a K-pop culture phase at one point, guys. I understand.
K-pop's good. K-pop's bopping.
It bops. It's good. Yeah. It's just sometimes the fan base, just like all big fan bases, when you're an outsider, feels really weird to you if you're not a part of it.
Man, you know what else fucking sucks about Twitter?
Tell me.
People can't just post their fic. I mean, people try. They post images of their fic, mm-hmm. like screenshots, mm-hmm. which is the worst thing in the world. And I understand. I understand you're trying to promote yourself and get yourself out there. Mm-hmm. But they are so, so inaccessible. And, like, they almost never have alt text. And, like, even if I'm on a phone, I have to scroll from one side to the other. And if I'm on my computer, oh, boo-hoo for me. My resolution is too high. But, like, I have to zoom in so far to see that text, and it's just like, it doesn't work. It doesn't. I miss fan edits, and like, anytime I have to look for reference of like an actor or a character's face for a commission or a painting or something, I always go back to Tumblr. And I search on Tumblr in their tag, because I know I'm going to get a curation of like good, flattering mm-hmm. images that are like nice, and like they're well color graded, and like sometimes they're animated, so I can go through the different frames. If I go to fucking Google, it's like, here's a really popular picture of like Willem Dafoe, and he's going to look god awful because he's on the fucking red carpet. And it's like, also, don't fucking tell me to use Pinterest. I hate Pinterest. Pinterest is the bane of my existence. I hate Pinterest.
I will say this. When I cosplayed Midsummer last year, I actually made a Hail Mary post on Tumblr. I was like, I need pictures of Danny's shoes. Which one of you gift makers did it? And mm-hmm. I tagged it Midsummer, and lo and behold, within 20 minutes, somebody linked me to their own personal gif edit, and I was able to detail my shoes like a pro, because mm-hmm. somebody was nice enough to link me to one of their Tumblr posts. And I obviously thanked the person, and then I proceeded to reblog said post as well, because I know in the grand scheme of things, like, what's a reblog? However, that's the least I could do. And with Twitter, you have this setup where it's like, good luck, bitch, because you're truly just at the mercy of whoever sees your tweet within that algorithm. Yeah. You used to be able to... you can't track... tags in Twitter, you know? People don't even tag things in Twitter half the time, unless you, like, search result it, but always the people who end up, like, scrolling through the searches are always weirdos, and they always, like, get on your ass for no reason, and it's just, like you were saying, Twitter is such a hostile place, and here I am typing brackets around words so people can't find it in the searches, like, and then, just... Twitter's blacklisting system is also awful as well. I just,
I think this episode is us just realizing we need to get on Pillow Fort.
Maybe. Maybe. I don't know. Perhaps.
This episode is supposed to be, you know, what makes a fan worse, but it turns out it's just Tumblr.
Yeah.
No. But yeah, I mean, I think those are key, though, is like the idea of a platform which allows communication. And I like, there are people who make Discord servers and stuff, which is like...
I'm so afraid of Discord servers.
Yeah.
I don't want to be seen. I don't want to talk. I just want to shout into the void of my own blog. And then if
people see... But that's, like, a huge part of, like, what allows a fandom to endure is people who can quietly engage.
Yes.
If they are just reblogging or retweeting or sharing. Because, okay, hi... I think a lot of people don't realize this if they're not an active content creator, but if you just like something, you're essentially... Only you get to see that.
Mm-hmm.
Someone might, by the grace of the gods, see it on Twitter. They might see that you liked something. Which also, terrible feature, Twitter. Fucking get rid of it.
It's
awful. I don't need somebody to see my likes. That's why we lost Armie Hammer. Y'all were fucking rooting around in his likes. Leave him alone. But if you retweet or reblog something, you are then putting eyes on it of all of your followers.
Mm-hmm.
And so every time somebody reblogs or retweets something, that shares it with a whole new audience that the artist doesn't have. Anyway, if you really like something, retweet it. I don't care if it doesn't match your aesthetic. Please, you never know who's going to see it and be like, I want to give that person a job.
Please.
That's real important.
Yeah.
We all struggling out here in 2020.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. To go back to... the actual topic of the episode, there's also something to consider anticipation with I think Netflix has also equally fucked up how fandom spaces work, because with Netflix, obviously everything is just out in one day. However, I think part of the reason why things like Star Trek has survived for so long is because there is a constant once a week. There's a backlog for you to consume if you are a new follower, and there's always the promise of a new season, a new series, a new movie somewhere down along.
There's cliffhangers, there's anticipation, people can speculate, make conjecture, there's, like, plot threads that people, like, if you only have one new episode available to you each week, and, like, maybe 12 episodes a year, maybe, all right? Like, you're gonna spend more time with those episodes. And, like, the amount of times I would go back and, like, rewatch something, like, the episode from the week prior, while waiting for the episode for this next week to come out, for just, like, any number of things. Like, the amount of detail you're able to catch then and really appreciate. And it sucks because, yeah, I think we are a culture right now that is very focused upon immediacy and accessibility. And Netflix did try to do stuff where they're like, oh, you know, we'll release, like, one episode every week. And, like, I'm guilty of it. Oh, I'm gonna wait for it all to finish and then watch all of it. And it's because, like, it's that's also just my ADHD brain of, like, it's much easier for me to set aside one giant block of time than one small block of time each week. But... That we're now missing out on that is really kind of frustrating, and I do wish we would go back to that, because, like, man, if I just got to watch one episode of The Witcher every week instead of watching it all in one night, and now I just gotta wait for, like, a year or two. I wish I didn't have to wait. I wish I had something to keep me going.
And then I also feel like there is this issue of when something is dropped all in one go, you end up becoming obsessed with this one portion of a series. And then when the second season of something, or the third, or the whatever season comes out, and it doesn't go the way that you planned, you're gonna hate it. And I... Hi, guys. I was really into Voltron Legendary Defender. And I watched season one four times before season two came out, and I watched all of season two in one day out of excitement, and then I never touched it again because of how miserable season two made me. And dare I say, it's because I ended up latching on the wrong characters, because those characters really got pushed into the dirt. But, boy howdy.
I mean, let's talk, too, about how queerbaiting can sustain a fandom.
Yes.
And I do not mean queer subtext. There is a difference between queer subtext and queerbaiting. Mm-hmm. They are very different. Mm-hmm. Queerbaiting is what Stephen Moffat did with the Sherlock series. He was more than aware of the fact that there was a huge fandom following, and that had existed prior to his show. Like, Sherlock fan fiction has been around for a very long time, but he was well aware that there was a large following that was invested in Sherlock and Watson being together, and he used that to constantly tease jokes or the idea, and, I mean, openly mock fans who thought that they would end up as an item, as opposed to queer subtext a la Lord of the Rings, with all male characters, like, let's just be honest. And then there's queer text, where it is actually in the narrative, whether that be more subtly or more overtly.
That scene in Great Gatsby in the elevator, y'all. Mm. That's real. Mm. That's real. Your teacher might not talk about it, but that's real. Mm-hmm. Like, it's confirmed by scholars. And I also think there's a huge issue of the relationship between a fandom and a creator, and a yes. fandom forcing a creator to change the story. Mm-hmm. I mean,
which is another thing that's mm-hmm. kind of been brought about by Twitter, mm-hmm. because, like, the creators, I mean, obviously they want to go and they want to create and they want to engage with spaces, and, like, it's more easy to contact them directly via Twitter and be like, hey, retweet my fan art. But that's also created kind of an uneven playing field. And I am immediately thinking of, like, there's just a lot of things that have happened in fandom history in the space of, like, the last 5 years that directly relate to fan relationships with creators because of creators saying one thing or another, or being put on the spot or asked to address something that has caused, like, massive explosions mm-hmm. within fandom spaces mm-hmm. and caused, like, huge division, huge conflict, etc.
And it also, in turn, ruins part of the story. Like, for instance, literally just last week, Shonen Jump property had its first popularity contest, and the character that won the popularity contest was actually killed in that chapter when the announcement was made. And I mean, so and people were like,
who was it?
It was for, sorry guys if you care about this, but it was for Chainsaw Man, and
I don't know what that is.
It's really good. I kind of like it, but mm-hmm. also at the same time, it really does feel like a shonen version for middle school boys of Dorohedoro, which is really unfortunate. But so I mean, I guess we could cut that out. I don't want to give spoilers to people who care about it.
I'll cut that out. But, I'm personally curious.
But when this was when the popularity contest winners was announced and then the new chapter came out, people were like, damn, this mangaka really doesn't care about what their fans think. And that's so weird to me, because, like, this is the mangaka's vision, this is the writer's ideas mm-hmm. and story, and why should the fans dictate what the story becomes?
Yeah.
It's not a choose your own adventure. Like,
and that's a really difficult argument that has been happening a lot in, like, the game community in reference to making games more accessible, and people who pride themselves on, you know, like, being incredible at, like, Soulsborne games, and they're like, well, those games shouldn't be made more accessible because the difficulty is, you know, in the fact of, like, it's baked into it, it's what makes the game that game. And, like, I am gonna come down on one side of that, and is that I think all games should be made more accessible. I think anyone should be able to experience art mediums, and it's created this really uncomfortable relationship where creators obviously are making things in part to satisfy their vision, and as you get to a more corporate level, that's going to distill quite a bit, and it's not going to become quite as potent, it's not going to be one singular person's vision anymore. But at the same time, I think it's really twisted for fans to come around then and say, hey, I really enjoy the thing you're creating, but I'm the one paying you in, like, part and parcel to make that, so you need to satisfy me in that. And it's like, well, that's not... how that really works. And it's just like, I don't know where we end up on that conversation. Like, you know, if you really enjoy somebody's artwork and you're subbing to their Patreon and you're helping to pay their bills, is it appropriate for you to step forward and say, you need to make more of X? And it's like, no, it's not. Fucking unsub from their Patreon or whatever. But it's just like...
And I mean, even sometimes it's not even the fan base, but it's actually the producers of the series. Yeah. I mean, none of us want to admit that we all watched the first 5 seasons of Supernatural, but we all sure did. And
yep,
I mean, Supernatural is supposed to end at the end of season 5. It's obvious. That's how it was supposed to end, however.
Let it go.
Yeah, just let it be for... I mean, I guess you're going to keep beating the dead horse as long as it spits out money. But how can you just so obviously disregard a creator's wishes? It's like with what SpongeBob is becoming now. Now that Steven Hillenburg mm-hmm. is dead, Nickelodeon is like, well, this is a cash cow for us, so we're going to keep doing this. And it feels so disingenuous and lifeless afterwards. And that's what Supernatural became. And I guess, yeah, that's what the fans wanted. Not even all fans. A good portion of all the fans. Like, some fans
I think there's always going to be a split in a fandom of people who are more invested in quote unquote the original vision mm-hmm. and people who are just more interested in more content mm-hmm. no matter what that content mm-hmm. is.
And that also begs the question.
Not saying that's a good or bad thing, but you know.
And then also begs the question, is being a different type of fan a good thing? I mean, let's be real, there's always people who just genuinely like something, and there's people mm-hmm. who always interact with a fan base. And I mm-hmm. feel like there's a huge difference between a fan who just watches a series every week or whenever it drops and maybe has a casual conversation with their friends about it when they go out to lunch or something like that. And there's the person who consumes fan media, makes their own media, buys merch for it, goes to conventions, yeah. goes to meet and greets and stuff like that. And at the end of the day...
Well, and then there's a bigger split then, too, between fans who buy merchandise, licensed merchandise, and fans who engage specifically in fan media exclusively.
Yes.
And, like, there's a very different vibe between those fans sometimes, mm-hmm. and some of them, in spending their money on a franchise, feel entitled to a say in it. Mm-hmm. Star Wars fandom, I'm looking at you.
And, I mean, not to keep going back to Supernatural, but... I mean, when Supernatural was big, there was, like, the Gawishes thing, and there was all these Supernatural cons where people
were... Fucking Mishapocalypse.
The Mishapocalypse, and, like, it became embedded within other cultures. Like, mm-hmm. there's no Dr. Seuss fandom, but there was a Wunsler fandom, and why is that? It's because... They were just interacting solely with fan content. They weren't mm-hmm. interacting with Dr. Seuss children's books or the Dr. Seuss political cartoons or whatever the hell. Mm. They were specifically interacting within the movie franchise, the base of the fan base itself, and the fan content and fan merchandise. And mm-hmm. how can a movie production company even recognize that they have a fan base when people in the audience are not... actually actively participating in the root piece of media any longer?
Yeah.
And when does the original piece leave and the fandom become separate? Because the Wunsler fandom isn't the Lorax fandom. It is the Wunsler fandom. It is the one yeah. character.
Well, and I mean, look at fucking the Snyder Cut, right? Like, that would not exist if not for the immense... giant outrage from people on Twitter just like directly calling for it and like accosting producers and harassing them via Twitter and being like, we want the Snyder Cut. And yes, there will maybe one day be an episode just about the Snyder Cut and the fucking nightmare that this is and like the precedent it sets for this industry. But this, like, that's not even like a fandom, though. That's people just feeling entitled to something and demanding something because the final product they got wasn't what they wanted. And the same thing happened with Mass Effect, and the same thing will happen over and over again.
I mean, Game of Thrones.
As long as, like, oh my God.
Literally got erased after people didn't get what they wanted.
And I mean, like, the endless amount of petitions being like, remake the final season, and it's like,
shut up.
You don't want the final season remade. You don't. Like, it's... I mean, Star Wars. the trajectory of that trilogy, of the newest trilogy, was changed irrevocably because of the negative backlash by superfans over The Last Jedi and over Kelly Marie Tran. John Boyega and Kelly Marie Tran got foisted to the background and made into negligible characters because of racist shitboy fans. This is not the... This is just a rant episode at this point.
Sorry, guys. But, like,
it's... There are so many aspects to what makes a fandom last, and a lot of it, too, is just lightning in a bottle. Like, there's... I can't tell you why the fuck the Wunsler fandom exists. I mean... There is certainly aspects to it where, like, that exclusivity and being a part of an event, like, I think that's huge for the Homestuck fandom. Mm-hmm. I think being able to, like, be there when, like, something just drops out of nowhere, that's huge. Mm-hmm.
I also think that there's a certain type of camaraderie that comes within fandom, and... I mean, if it's, like, especially towards a movie or a celebrity or something like that, like, obviously you're never going to meet an anime character. You're never going to meet a video game character. Chances are you're never going to meet a celebrity either.
I met Kratos. He's my dad.
He's your dad? The penitent one from Blasphemous is my dad, so we all love our dads. But there's a camaraderie between fans that you can't have that relationship with these characters, but when you care about other fans, you end up almost having, like, a foster system in a way that, like, you can still talk about this thing that you care about with them, and they feel similar to you, and they shared personal experiences, and they shared the experience of these characters and these celebrities and stuff like that. And you kind of build together this universe in a way, whether it be via headcanon or through meta or analysis and stuff like that, and you discover new information together, and you're there when things release, and it becomes, in turn, a real relationship, despite the relationship that you have to these characters and series. And I feel like with that, that builds the urge to keep continuing to talk to these people and to build with these people and stuff like that. Because if it's just you, I mean, how many times has people just lost interest in something because just not a lot of people care about it, and they just don't, they're just not exposed to it as much as they are exposed to other stuff.
Every property in the world has one person, one singular person, who that is their hyper-focus interest, and that is all they care about.
That's me with Beck Mongolian Chop Squad, baby. I've literally been published to talk about this before.
Yeah. But, like, this... Fandoms last longer if there's a larger community. And when there's a larger community, you're ostensibly going to get more production of fan media. But it is a lot more taxing for creators to make things when the things they make only stay visible for maybe a day. Maybe a day.
I mean, I know, for instance, Beastars is a wonderful example of this. When the Beastars anime came out, people were like, oh my god, I love this. This is gorgeous. I'm so into this. And then within a week, it disintegrated. 2 weeks, tops, it disintegrated. Yeah. However, I know people who are into the Beastars manga and were into it before the anime was even announced and afterwards. And maybe it's just because I've been reading it for over a year now, so I met people who cared about Beastars before an anime even was a twinkle in our eyes. But it's so obvious who was a fan of it just for the anime versus who was a fan of it just for the manga. It's like, we had to wait and suffer for this, and then we got the blast of the anime itself, and now it's just back to only having manga content. And there's such an obvious divide of who fans were before and after, simply because there's just not a visual aspect to it right now.
Yeah, and I mean, like, that's part of it, too, is that if you can't... I'm thinking about just, like, being on Tumblr and how, you know, you could sustain your own micro-community of people who are really interested in something because fan art would just, like, happen across your dash, or you would go into the tag and you'd go really far back in the tag and find old fan art and you'd retweet it, and suddenly that's making the rounds again, and everyone's like, oh, I really liked that thing. I'm also going to go back in the tag and look at this kind of thing. That doesn't happen on Twitter.
No.
It doesn't.
No.
Anyway, Twitter's the death of fandom. I mean, it's not. Like, there are still people out there kicking on, like, LiveJournal and Delicious and stuff. Like, people are still using defunct platforms, but they don't have the reach that they used to. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the most frustrating part. And
MySpace,
I think if you would ask...
still exists. I mean...
MySpace, I'm coming back, baby. We're going to revive. I wish there was a button that we could just nuke all the content that's currently on Tumblr and start fresh. And it would be a golden day. And we would allow nipples again. Oh my god. Tumblr that was the worst decision you ever made.
I mean, that ultimately killed Tumblr because...
It really did.
I don't want to say, like, the sex worker community, but a lot of people lost their income because of Tumblr, you know? Not
just like a lot of people are losing their income because of Bella Thorne jumping onto OnlyFans. Mm-hmm. Thank you for cosplaying as a sex worker for a day, Bella Thorne. Fuck off.
Yeah. And just like with Tumblr making this platform suddenly more whatever family friendly, I guess you want to call it, in turn that ruins it for fan artists, that ruins it for sex workers, and then the algorithm didn't even work, so now mm-hmm. random people were getting hit and getting shadow banned, essentially, to use a Twitter word. And it's just, you do need to police some things. Like, you obviously mm-hmm. you need to be policing pedophilia and incest and racism and homophobia and the Nazis and all that shit. And
media companies need to make more dedicated and respected task forces specifically for combing out harmful content. Mm. I know, what is it? Fucking Y Gallery or Yaoi Gallery is coming back. And a lot of people are furious about the fact that they're allowing Shotokan stuff. Like,
interesting.
And I mean, yeah, it's you can't set up these giant playgrounds, or let me do this, you can't set up giant public pools and then not have a lifeguard present. And you need to pay that lifeguard, and you need to make sure that lifeguard is able to take breaks. I mean, it's like QA testers in games. Everybody mocks QA testers because it's an entry-level position, but those people are there to make sure that the content you're paying for is actually playable and accessible and works the way it's supposed to, so that it's not getting harmfully overrun by Nazis, so that it's not having, like, constant streams of gore in the search tags to, like, purposefully harm people.
Yeah. That's...
But fucking Jack Dorsey says, nah, Nazis are allowed. And it's like, hey, Jack.
And I don't understand why you'd want those people in your communities anyway. And, I mean, unfortunately...
There's a really fantastic video essay by Folding Ideas on YouTube about a video platform that sprung up because of YouTube's policing of content, right? And the thing is that whenever you open up a new alternative platform which allows for, I'm going to say, more diverse ideas, I think we all know that some ideas that are in that are really harmful, awful ideas that should not be had, but when you have a platform that springs up in competition that allows more diverse ideas, the first people who are going to join it are going to be the people you kicked off of your ship. So when YouTube banned a bunch of Nazis, they all went over to this new platform, and that's the community they made and they built. And I think the initial route on Twitter a lot of times was a lot of people from alt-right platforms, and it has kind of set the stage, and Jack doesn't want to lose his OGs.
Yeah.
And I mean, I also don't think that he's brave enough to come out and condemn the alt-right. Because, let's be honest, some of the ideas he has are shared by them.
Mm-hmm. And not to mention with, I mean, Mark Zuckerberg and Facebook, one of his biggest fact-checking groups for Facebook is, in fact, an alt-right newspaper. I mean, we've all seen the video of AOC absolutely smacking Mark. I almost said Jesse Eisenberg. Mark.
Spider-Man put in the time. He put in the time. Poor Jesse Eisenberg.
Mark.
I don't know him.
Zuckerberg. just absolutely destroying Mark Zuckerberg for condemning these people and just letting them run around on a playground. And I mean, opinions are allowed, but when opinions are presented as fact, that's when it becomes an issue. And this has nothing to do with
fans. Opinions are allowed, but opinions are, I like chocolate ice cream instead of vanilla ice cream. Not, this person literally doesn't deserve to exist because of who they are, like, and can't help, mm-hmm. like, that sort of thing. I mean, and that's just a much bigger conversation, but, like, that also exists and contributes to fandom spaces because it's impossible for fandom not to be touched by the political culture of the world.
And when your platform allows people to partake in these political platforms, you're going to get weirdos, you know?
Mm-hmm.
You're
going to get exposed. Like, Attack on Titan, right? Yeah. Like, I literally saw a YouTuber made a comment in a video about how they didn't enjoy Attack on Titan anymore because it had become really weird and really alt-right, and a bunch of people in the comments being like, actually, no, it's not. It's, like, really interesting. And it's like, I need you to go back to your high school English class when your teacher taught you that there was meaning in the curtains being blue and you thought that was fake. That lesson was not about the curtains being blue and what that meant. That lesson was about learning to read subtext and identify propaganda. Like, your creative ideals and the properties you are engaging with do not exist in a vacuum.
Mm-hmm. There's always...
They don't.
And I mean, oftentimes, shit just is picked to just be picked, you know? Like, I mean, for my birthday, a friend drew one of my OCs, and appropriately enough, her name is Cass, and I was like, damn, the only two friends that I have named Cass are both men, and they use he, him pronouns. And I was like, huh, I have two OCs named Cass that both use she, her pronouns. I was like, huh, I never thought about that until 2 days ago. And, I mean, sometimes people just pick shit out of their ass, yeah. You know? But a lot of times, there's a lot of reason why things are allegories, things are symbolism. And when you mm-hmm. look at something like Attack on Titan with a series that has an experience of imperialism and has a history of colonialism and has a history of genocide, I mean, quite literally, there are only two Asian people left in this whole entire series, and you don't think that's some sort of symbolism. Mm-hmm. I mean, not even, and I know, like, whenever we rip on Attack on Titan, I always love to bring up the fact that the Attack on Titan editor quite literally killed his wife, so you know that shit is rotten to the core no matter what. But that just shows the type of person that approved of it in the first place. Like, mm-hmm. you...
Well, and I mean, so... Hi, I went to art school, and one of my huge frustrations was always with my classmates complaining about the fact that they had to take humanities courses. The humanities courses you are made to take in college are there to make you a more thoughtful and well-rounded individual. And yeah, some of them fucking suck. But there is context and nuance to almost everything in this world. Like, even to that statement, there is context and nuance, and so it is really important for you to be careful and thoughtful, otherwise you end up with people making fucking Hetalia fan art when there's a natural disaster. Like, it's there so that you can learn, and that you can remember that there is a world that exists outside of your very limited scope, and so that you don't have a negative impact, or that if you do have a negative impact, you know how to perform actual harm reduction.
Mm-hmm. So, to go over this episode...
because it went a lot of different directions, and I think maybe every few episodes we'll just have a talking point and kind of go off. Because we didn't have any notes, and we didn't do any research for this one. This was just...
I read, like, two articles.
Conversation time.
Yeah. I just read, like, two articles. One was about how much a girl loved Jake Gyllenhaal, and I loved every minute of it. You know? And so... I mean, obviously, I just feel like there's no right way to make a fandom, but there are mm-hmm. elements.
Wrong ways.
There are wrong ways, yeah. There are elements that do help it last, whether yeah. it be just the sheer number of people involved in it, the content itself being malleable to, you know what? That's an excellent word instead of playing Barbie. If the characters are malleable, that ends up being such a good thing for mm-hmm. fan content creators. There we go.
That's why there's a huge Gumby fandom. He's so malleable.
We love him. He's so wiggly. Clayey.
But if you have any observations of your own that you would like to share with us, I would really encourage you to kind of reach out and share them with us at authorsnotepod@gmail.com. We would love to hear your thoughts on really any of the things we talk about, mm-hmm. or if you have more questions or suggestions for ideas, that would be super welcome. If you're interested, you can follow us on Twitter at authorsnotepod. We have a card there where you can find lots of information on how to support us. We are on Ko-fi. If you would be interested in more directly fiscally supporting us, that would be a huge help. It's just authorsnotepod. Again, We would love to hear from you. We're having a lot of fun making this podcast, and it's a really awesome thing to do, so we would like to keep doing it. If you're interested in finding more of my work, you can find me on Twitter at Valhethella. That's at ValHethella.
You could find me at Vicunad, VicuNad, which is my Twitter. I'm also on Fresh Podcast Market, which the Twitter is just Fresh Pod Market. And by the time this episode comes out, this will be like 5 weeks old already, but I'm going to be on an episode of Playing Dress Up. And Playing Dress Up is available on all platforms the same way that we are. So you could easily just go on Spotify or Apple Podcast or whatever and look up Playing Dress Up, and you'll see probably a picture of my giant DS somewhere. And if you are interested in our theme song, that was made by composer James Wyulo, and his Bandcamp is jamesy.bandcamp.com.
Our cover art was made by Nyaliest. You can find her on Twitter at Nyaliest, NYALLIEST. If you enjoyed the episode, share it with a friend. Tell people about us. That would be hugely appreciated. Until next time, thank you so much for joining us, and stay safe.
Have a good one, guys.